Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and boy, we got plenty to talk about today. It was a busy weekend for college athletics in general. This whole Pac-12 saga that's going down. I don't know how it's going to end. Something tells me it's not going to end well for the players. I think it's semi-similar to what happened with Northwestern back in 2015 when the players tried to unionize. Remember when this whole thing went down? If by chance you missed this over the weekend, news broke yesterday that Pac-12 football players from multiple schools would write a letter to the Players Tribune, which would be released today, and they would basically threaten to opt out of fall camp and game participation unless their demands for, quote, fair treatment, safety regulations, and concerns over racial justice for college athletes are met by the conference. And there's a lot out there. I mean, we could spend an hour talking about this particular topic. Basically, what it boils down to, they are demanding that coaches, administration, and commissioners take a pay cut. They also want to see a sum of revenue spread out among the athletes who are taking the risk of participating during a global pandemic. And to be a little bit more in depth, it starts by talking about safety protections with the pandemic going on. Allowing student-athletes to opt out of play during the pandemic without losing eligibility or a spot on the team, prohibiting any COVID-19 agreements that waive liability, and player-approved health and safety standards enforced by a third party selected by the players to address COVID-19. Like I said, they're talking about pay, so they want Commissioner Larry Scott, administrators, and coaches to drastically reduce excessive pay and to end performance bonuses in order to help preserve existing sports. So this is, you know, the lower echelon sports, cross country, bowling, sports like that, rowing. Stanford just got rid of 11 sports. In addition to those financial requests, the student athletes are demanding guaranteed medical expense coverage for 6 years after their college eligibility ends. And they are asking the Pac-12 to distribute 50% of each sports conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports, to give 6-year athletic scholarships and for the ability to transfer one time without any sort of penalty. Bottom line is 50% of each sports conference revenue evenly among athletes. Anything above zero is entirely too much. I don't know what's going to happen here, but I read up on this quite a bit. And I read about the source, and I read about where it came from. And I'm going to be honest with you, and this may not be a popular opinion, but that's okay. I believe these student athletes that are making these demands are taking advantage of A, a pandemic, and B, the current political climate. That's my take on it. And I think they've gone completely overboard. You know, do you ever watch the TV show Last Chance U on Netflix? Look, if these Pac-12 schools said, all right, this is the way you want to be, get out. Every player that you watch on Last Chance U would be more than happy to join a Pac-12 school. Same thing could be said for BYU. And we're going to talk about the Cougars on the show today. We don't know if there's going to be a football season for BYU. I'll tell you right now, every student athlete in Provo would transfer to a Pac-12 school right now if they were guaranteed a scholarship and a chance to play athletics. Guaranteed. See, this is the problem with college athletics, and we've had this conversation many of times. These student athletes, and again, I put emphasis on student athletes, take advantage of the student aspect. It's not every student athlete. It's not fair to group them all in. But we always have a large percentage. Now, I don't believe this is a black or white issue. I believe there is a gray area. I do believe that student athletes should be able to capitalize on their likeness. Do you know what percentage of student athletes could capitalize on their likeness while they're in school? 2%, if that, maybe. Right? This is a topic that's not going away anytime soon. I'm curious to see how the Pac-12 handles it, but my initial reaction to this, student athletes taking advantage of a world, or attempting to take advantage of a worldwide pandemic and the current political climate that we're in right now, they're doing that, trying to force the hand of the Pac-12. I'm really curious to see how this plays out, but I'm telling you, I don't believe it ends well for the student athletes. In fact, Washington State football coach Nick Rolovich has already told Cassidy Woods, who's a wide receiver on the team, that if he was to join the Unity Group, it would, quote, cause an issue. He said, quote, that's going to be an issue if you align with them as far as the future for stuff. Woods is currently on a scholarship. He was going to opt out because he is immunocompromised. I believe he has a sickle cell trait. And his coach told him, that's fine, but if you're opting out for any other reason, it could cause a problem. This is going to be the reoccurring theme. I just don't think this ends well. If we have time, we'll talk more about this a little bit later on the show. We are going to be joined today by Phil Still, college football guru. He's author of the college football, Phil Still's College Football Preview. It is the Bible for college football previews. I have to get one every single year. He's going to join us on the show. That's coming up in just a bit. I don't want to talk about this with Phil. I want to talk about the on-field product. In fact, that'll be next segment. He plans on joining us for a couple of segments. We do have to push things through a little bit faster on the intro to the show today. We'll go over some of the other headlines in just a moment, but we'll take a look at the scoreboard right now in the NBA. The Indiana Pacers are on their way to picking up a victory over the Washington Wizards. Remember, we have basketball throughout the entire day. Toronto tops the Miami Heat 107-103. The Raptors have looked great so far in the NBA restart. Right now, the Thunder and Nuggets are battling in a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. Still to come at 4:30, we get Memphis and New Orleans. San Antonio will take on Philadelphia at 6 p.m. And at 7 o'clock tonight, the Utah Jazz will make their return to KOAL as they take on the Los Angeles Lakers. Live coverage of that game is going to begin at 6:50. As far as Major League Baseball is concerned, no day games. We are getting set for the Cleveland Indians and Cincinnati Reds at 4:40. The St. Louis Cardinals and Detroit Tigers have postponed their matchup as well. Two nationally televised games, the Mets and the Braves on FS1 at 5:10, and then tonight, Oakland and Seattle on ESPN. That's a quick look at what is happening in the national sports front. Again, we're going to be joined by Phil Still live over the phone here in about 5 minutes. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and there is plenty more coming up. It's Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Farm Studios.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Well, there was definitely a lot to talk about in the realm of college football over the weekend. Everything going down with the Pac-12 and I guess the questions surrounding the 2020 season. But for this segment, I want to stick to on the field. The actual play, the potential play of the college football season. A lot of storylines as far as the ACC. Last week, they made the announcement that Notre Dame would join their conference for the season. And I believe that that forces a lot of questions now with BYU. Will the Cougars even have a season? We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest. He's kind enough to join us every summer. He's the author of the College Football Preview Bible every year, Phil Still's College Football Preview, which is available right now. Phil Still joining us on the phone. Phil, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us again today.
Hey, always a pleasure, Jordan. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, I look forward to this every year. Every time we get you on, it's always insightful and it's always exciting because that means we have college football right around the corner. We'll talk about the magazine, which is available right now. But, Phil, this has probably been the most bizarre, I'm going to say, last year for you, right? Ever since we've hit January, I'm sure things have just been crazy for you. How have you managed to put all the work that goes into the magazine, catch up with all the football programs, and keep up with the potential schedule changes?
Yeah, I tell you what, it's been a hectic off season, and you know the good news is, the magazine is a 6-month process. So we start at the Sunday after Thanksgiving, doing the first write throughs. We do our second write throughs after the freshmen have signed and players left early for the NFL. So we got 4 months worth of work put into the magazine out of our 6 months, and then all of a sudden the state of Ohio shut us down. I was coming into an empty office every day. And at that point, I'm even wondering if we're going to put a magazine out this year. Then they were allowed to come back in. The staff came back in with a vengeance. And then I started talking to the head coaches. And got to be honest with you, Jordan, the head coach got me fired up. I didn't know what to expect. But I would say, hey, coach, tough break, no spring practices. And the coach would say, you know what, it's no big deal. Well, you know, it's next man up. We had our players ready for spring practice. We got them through winter conditioning. And you put the ball in the field, we'll be ready to play. They got me fired up for the football season. That's why I'm pretty bullish on the fact we will be playing football in the fall this year. But the magazine did go out later. We sent the last page of the press in July as opposed to May. And the other thing is we really limited the distribution this year. We normally print a couple hundred thousand. This year only printed 50,000 magazines, and they're only at Barnes & Noble and only at Books A Million. No other places out there. So those are the two major changes for me.
But of course, you can always download the digital copy at your website as well.
That's correct. You can go to philsteele.com and get the digital copy or get the hard copy as well.
All right, let's talk college football. It was no surprise to me that Notre Dame wraps up with the ACC. I mean, they have the 6-game contract as well. If Notre Dame does decide to join a conference before 2036, it has to be with the ACC. To me, that was a non-factor, Phil, and we'll tie that into BYU in just a moment. But it is odd to me that after everything that has gone down over the last, 20, 30 years, people begging Notre Dame to join a conference, their schedule gets easier now that they have joined the ACC.
Yeah, that's interesting. Although I'll say this, Jordan, the ACC is the most improved conference in college football. Let me explain. Last year I had them rated the 6th best conference in college football behind the American because it was basically Clemson, and I don't even know who the 2nd best team was last year. They really didn't have one. But this year when you look at the ACC, a team like North Carolina now has 17 returning starters. They've got one of the best young quarterbacks in the country in Sam Howell, and Mac Brown doing a great job recruiting there. Watch out for North Carolina. Miami of Florida added De'Ara King from Houston at quarterback. And they also add Quincy Roche, who was the American Conference Defensive Player of the Year from Temple with 13 sacks. He goes along with Gregory Rousseau, who had 15 and a half sacks as a redshirt frosh last year. Virginia Tech returns 18 returning starters. And Pitt had 3 players turn down the NFL on defense and also had lost their top defensive end and defensive tackle heading into last year. Those guys are both back as well. They're going to have one of the best defenses in the country. I thought coming in before the Notre Dame announcement that the ACC was the most improved conference out there. Now with Notre Dame in there, wow, this conference has some strength.
Yeah, and I know that you speak quite highly of Notre Dame as far as your preseason top 25. You have Notre Dame in the top 10.
Yeah, and the Irish, you remember 2 years ago I picked them as my number one surprise team, and they weren't in the top 10 at the start of the year, made the playoff. I think when you look at Notre Dame this year, they pretty much were true to form last year, Jordan. They were an underdog in 2 games, at Georgia and at Michigan. They lost those. They were favored in all the other games, and they won them all. They went 11-2, and if you look at their schedule this year, or their prior schedule, you know, their original one, the only game that would have been an underdog this year may have been Clemson at home, and now it'll be interesting to see what they do in conference play, but this is a good Notre Dame team. Ian Book's back at QB. They've got a solid linebacking core led by Drew Wright and Kamara, and the special teams are even solid. I rate them number 10, so this is a very good Irish team.
So when you look at the ACC front to back, and again with the addition of Notre Dame and the way the ACC is going to hold their championship game, top 2 teams December 12th or 19th, is it as easy as saying it's Notre Dame and Clemson? Even though they play, are those the 2 best teams in this conference?
I think North Carolina's got a shot sneaking in there, as does Miami. I would put those two right up there with them. And North Carolina avoids Clemson and plays Notre Dame. So I think that North Carolina-Notre Dame winner has a really good shot of being in the ACC title game. But North Carolina and Miami of Florida, both are teams that are right up there.
Again, Phil Steele, our guest right now, college football guru. And Phil, I wanted to start with Notre Dame and the ACC because, well, there's one independent that now has a conference, but the bigger question here in the state of Utah, what is BYU going to do? BYU here in the state of Utah has been a fun topic of discussion for about 3 weeks now.
Yeah, and that really is the interesting point. And for Coach Satake's sake, let's hope BYU's playing some football this year, because this is BYU's best team that he has put on the field. It is by far the deepest team, the most experienced team. They have 8 starters back on offense, led by Zach Wilson, who got banged up last year. You look at that offensive line, and Coach Satake feels they go 3 deep at every position on the offensive line. NFL-caliber guys in left tackle Brady Christensen, center James Empey. They've got an outstanding tight end in Matt Bushman. Defensively, Tonga up front at the nose tackle. The linebacking core is a veteran group that I rate number 36 in the country. This is a very, very good, very experienced, and you want to have an experienced team this year with the lack of spring practices. I think BYU can make some noise. Now they just got to get themselves on the football field.
You mentioned Zach Wilson, and even though we missed some time last year, I mean, he still threw for 2,400 yards, 11 scores. I mean, he was still very good in the limited time that we saw him. Even with the experience coming back and the numbers that he put up, is it fair to say that his starting job may be in question? Because, I mean, you have a couple of kids behind him. I mean, sophomores behind him in Jaron Hall and Baylor Romney, and we got to see these two guys last year as well. They won some games in his absence.
I do think Hall and Romney are very capable replacements if something happened to Wilson, but I would put Wilson as the top guy in my book. Now, talking to Coach Satake, he did say all three were involved and all three were battling it out there, and Romney looked good at times, and so did Hall. But I do think that Zach Wilson eventually wins that job and keeps it.
I'm assuming that you saying this is the deepest BYU team, the most experienced BYU team, you can't overlook what they have defensively as well. A lot of individuals that could shine this year.
Yeah, look at Tonga up front at the nose tackle spot. I mean, he's 6'4", 321. He's really what you want, and he needs to become an every-down player, but he's an NFL prospect up front. You look at the linebacking core led by Kafusi, Wilgar, Fanua, even Zane Anderson, that's the linebacker core, that cornerback Zane Anderson and Chris Wilcox. Remember last year, those two guys were coming in as the projected starters and then got injured, and so they had to play others. Now it's a very deep cornerback spot because, Heron's back, Mandel's back, but those two, Anderson and Wilcox, could beat him out. Troy Warner, another guy who last year saw limited action due to injuries, and now he's back as well. Chaz IU, I like the talent that they have on defense. And once again, 2 to 3 deep at almost every position on the team. This is, I'll say it again, Satake's best team, most experienced team that he's put on the field.
Could you get the sense that Satake is feeling some pressure at this stage in his career when speaking to him?
I don't think he feels the pressure, but I know that he knows it's out there, yes.
Yeah, definitely. Again, Phil Steele, our guest right now, author of the College Football Preview book, Phil Steele's College Football Preview. Phil, let's move over. We'll talk Utah Ute football. There's a lot of familiar faces gone from this Ute team, and I know that if you're a Utah fan, the last two vibes that you saw, sour taste. I mean, overwhelmed by Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game and then beat handedly by Texas as well. And when you look at Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss and Bradley and A, I mean, these are familiar faces that have really pulled this Utah Ute team over the last couple of years, and they are gone.
Yeah, and you hit on it. I don't know if Coach Whittingham or myself was more disappointed in that Pac-12 title game, because I had picked Utah as my number one surprise team in the country last year. If they beat Oregon, they're in the playoff as a non-top 10 team that makes the playoffs again. And then, as you mentioned, it was just tough, that game, and then the poor bowl game against Texas. But despite the fact they only have 2 returning starters on offense or on defense, despite the fact that Zach Moss and Tyler Huntley are gone, I think they're still a contender in the South, and it points right back at Kyle Whittingham. I think when you look at Kyle Whittingham, he does a great job replacing players like that. Now, the defensive line's not going to be up to last year's standards. Last year's defensive line was phenomenal, but Tafu was there, Moala's there, they've got Toupe. There are plenty of good players up front on the defense, so they're still going to be good on the defensive line. Devin Lloyd at the linebacker spot. Clark Phillips steps in, a true freshman at nickelback. He's an unusual recruit for Utah, one of my very highly talented players coming out of high school. So I think they have the makings of a good defense. And then offensively, which quarterback do you choose? Jake Bentley or Cam Rising? A couple of big-time transfers coming in. Jake Bentley's got a lot of experience playing in SEC country with South Carolina. Rising was a highly touted player. They've got Brant Keithy back at tight end along with Fotheringham. them. The offensive line looks solid. Last year, there's probably a few questions on the offensive line. No questions this year. Moala and Ford at the tackle spot are two of the best in the country. So there's talent on this Utah team, and I think they're going to give USC a run for their money in the Pac-12 South.
And you mentioned Jake Bentley coming over at quarterback again. I believe he got 33, 32 starts, something like that, while he was with South Carolina. So he's familiar. He's gotten some game time, but in the same sense, you take a kid like Cameron Rising, he has the advantage of having to spend a season working with the Utes last year. So did you get a vibe as to who may be the starting quarterback for Utah once the season gets rolling?
You know, talking to Coach Whittingham, it's definitely pretty much 50-50 right now, because if you look at Rising, I mean, he's a guy that's big and strong, and he's got the escapability that you want in the pocket. And he did well. As you mentioned, he did well as a scout team quarterback last year, impressed the coaching staff. And then you look at Bentley, he's more of your classic pocket guy with the big arm and SEC experience. So, you know, it's 6-1, half dozen of the other. I don't think Coach Whittingham can make a wrong decision here, because you've got two solid choices to choose from.
Now, as far as the Utes and this inexperience goes, because there was a lot of NFL talent on this team last year, as we saw with the NFL draft, the Pac-12 South hasn't exactly been the world beater of Power 5 divisions, Phil. I know USC is going to be a lot better. At least I expect them to be a lot better. I know you do as well. Is it unreasonable to say the expectation for Utah would be to win the Pac-12 South again for a third straight season?
Well, my expectation is for USC to win it because of the amount of talent, the amount of experience they have coming back, especially a year where there's lack of spring practices. But I've got Utah right there behind USC and competing for the title. And I think you touched on it a little bit. When you look at the South, I think the only other team that enters into contender status would be Arizona State. You get to the bottom half, UCLA, I'm still waiting to see if Chip Kelly can get it done there. Arizona, Kevin Sumlin's been struggling in his years. And then Colorado is a first-year head coach, taken over with the lack of spring practices, and he's the third head coach in 3 years, which is a tough situation to step into. So I think the South, it's USC, Utah, and Arizona State, and then all the other guys at the bottom. But I've got USC winning it with Utah number two.
Yeah, well, we can't forget that the North will play a really big factor in this as well, right? So when you look at the Pac-12 North and compare to the Pac-12 South, what's the biggest difference for you, Phil? I mean, what are some teams that you look at and you say, okay, this is the cream of the crop?
Well, Oregon, when going over the team with Coach Cristobal, Oregon is loaded, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Oregon's got my number six rated defensive line in the country, led by Thibodeau. Jordan Scott up front as well. You look at the linebacking core led by Javon Holland at nickelback. And then the secondary, I've got rated number one in the country coming in the season. So that's a dangerous defense. All they have to do is replace Justin Herbert and four of the starters on the offensive line. But they do return Penei Sewell, who's the top offensive lineman in the country. And they've got plenty of speed at the skill position. So Coach Cristobal is doing a great job with Oregon. Washington is a team that I think can contend in the North because they have eight starters back on defense. Jimmy Lake's always done a great job there with inexperienced players on defense. Last year they only had two starters back. Still did extremely well. Now they've got eight starters back on D. And they've got potential on offense. They lose their quarterback. They lose their top running back, 1,000-yard rusher. They lose their top two receivers from last year. But there is talent, and if they can get the offense, offensive line reworked, they've got a chance of contending. And don't discount Stanford. David Shaw hasn't forgotten how to coach. He's one of the best head coaches out there. They went through some tough circumstances injury-wise last year. Now they've got 16 returning starters. Davis Mills should be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Stanford could be one of those surprise sleeper picks. And then I think the rest of the North, all solid. Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State are all teams very capable of getting back to a bowl game this year. So I do think the North has the depth, but I think the top three teams there are Oregon, Washington, and Stanford.
Well, Phil, over the last couple of years, I mean, you've been on point when you picked sleepers here on the show. 2 years ago, it was Notre Dame. Last year, it was Utah. And Utah, very close. They were in the playoff conversation up until that Pac-12 championship game. Who's your top four this year, and who's the sleeper team to watch out for?
Well, the top four I went with, Jordan, are pretty much chalk. I went with Oklahoma winning the Big 12, Clemson winning the ACC, Ohio State winning the Big 10, and Alabama winning the SEC. So no surprises there. Pretty much everybody in the country's got those four teams. But if you are looking for that surprise team, my number one surprise team in the country this year is Texas A&M. And it goes back to my conversations I had with Coach Fisher last year. Going through the team with them, they only had four or five seniors on the interior. entire squad. So it was a young team last year. And then I looked at that schedule, and I was like, wow. And as it was, they took on number one ranked Clemson, number one ranked Alabama, and number one ranked LSU, who plays three number one teams in the same season. They also took on number four Georgia and number eight Auburn. So the young team played five top ten teams, and those are the five games they lost. I told Coach Fisher at the end of the conversation last year, hey, Coach, I'm going to put you on my national cover next year. Well, next year's here. They've got 17 returning starters led by a veteran quarterback in Kellen Mond. In fact, they're the most experienced team in the SEC, number 10 on my experience chart, and the schedule gets a lot softer. Number 66 schedule in the country. They may only face one top 10 team all year. So easier schedule, much stronger team. Jimbo Fisher's got three great recruiting classes. And what I found is generally head coaches hit their stride year three. This is the year for Texas A&M this year, and they are my number one surprise team.
Phil Still, author of the College Football Preview book, Phil Still's College Football 2020 Preview. Phil, before I let you go, let the listeners know once again where they can not only find the magazine, but also follow you on social media.
Well, you're a heck of a guy, Jordan. You can on Twitter, you can follow me at PhilSteele042. That's at PhilSteele042. Now, as I mentioned earlier, different distribution this year. We're normally out everywhere printing a couple hundred thousand. This year, we only printed 50,000. The only two places you can get the magazine are Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. So don't waste your gas driving around looking for it where you normally find it. It's only at Barnes & Noble or Books A Million this year. Or you can, of course, order it right on our website, which is PhilSteele.com. That's STEELE.com. Order the magazine today. We ship today. So Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, PhilSteele.com. Follow me on Twitter at PhilSteele042.
Phil, I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you so much for the time, and I look forward to when we can do it again.
Really enjoyed talking football with you once again, Jordan. Had a lot of fun, my friend.
I always look forward to that segment every year. Phil Still's College Football Preview Magazine, it is out now. And if you love college football, I'm telling you, it is a must-have. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Again, live from the Auto Farm Studios, right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
In 5, 4, 3, 2...
I'm Joe Wade for McCullough, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the game. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no.
Coming up tonight at 6:50, we'll send you out to live coverage. David Locke, Ron Boone standing by. They'll bring you play-by-play coverage as the Jazz take on LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers, both teams looking to rebound from a rather lackluster performance. I mean, the Lakers were beaten in a game that was just odd against the Toronto Raptors. I think that's a potential NBA Finals matchup. That was my pick at the beginning of the year, and I'm going to stick to it. That Raptor team just plays great defense through and through. The Jazz on the flip side, 16-point loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And honestly, you look at the two games that the Jazz have played so far since the restart, and it's basically what I think a lot of us expected. This is a team that gets stingy on the defensive end of the floor, but without Bojan Bogdanović, how do they score enough points? And that's been a question for the Jazz all season long, even when they had Bogdanović. So now that you don't have him, how do you score enough points? And as far as matchups are concerned, I mean, I am still a believer that if the Jazz were to find themselves in a best-of-seven series with the Houston Rockets, they have a legitimate chance to come out on top in that series. If they find themselves in a seven-game set with the Los Angeles Lakers, it's over in five. You know, the Lakers have had no problems with the Jazz up to this point in time, and it's just because it's a bad matchup. It does, however, feature two of the premier defensive players in the game, Anthony Davis and Rudy Gobert. And for every bit of greatness that Rudy shines on the defensive end of the floor, it's a bad matchup with Anthony Davis. I think Anthony Davis is one of the most versatile players that we don't talk about in the game, and we saw this against the Clippers last Thursday. This is a guy that can step out, he can hit a three-point shot, he's deadly mid-range, terrific on the defensive end of the floor, he can do a little bit of everything. And I do believe that a lot of people severely underrated Anthony Davis. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It was about this time last year we were having a conversation on if the Lakers gave up too much for Anthony Davis. And I said, that is completely preposterous. There's no way. This guy is phenomenal. How good is Anthony Davis? He gives Rudy Gobert fits. When he pulls Rudy away from the basket, LeBron James is going to have a field day. It's happened twice already, and I believe it'll happen again tonight. It's just a matchup I would like a whole lot better for the Jazz if Derek Favors was still wearing a Jazz uniform, because it gives you just another body to stick on LeBron. And you're not going to stop LeBron. Nobody can stop LeBron James. But you can somewhat contain him, right? You can make things difficult on him. I just don't think the Jazz can do that. You know, throw Royce O'Neal at him? Joe Ingles? I just don't think it works. It's a bad matchup for this team. Which, again, brings up the topic of seeding in the Western Conference. And even though the Jazz were horrible against Oklahoma City, when you look at the current seeding in the Western Conference, they are a half game back of the Denver Nuggets and essentially tied with the Rockets. Utah could still move up to the 3 seed. And that's what's important, right? To avoid matchups, certain matchups. The one matchup I hate in the Western Conference for the Jazz, it is the Los Angeles Lakers. And tonight, the Lakers are favored by 6 points. And it is also important to mention that the Lakers can lock up the number one seed in the Western Conference with a win. All they need is one more win over the next 6 games, and they lock up the one seed. And my take on the seeding has been this. You want the one seed, but you want the one seed so you can get the 8, who may have to play in a play-in game to get to the postseason. Then you want the one seed to avoid number 2 and number 3 in the second round. I mean, that's it. As far as home court advantage is concerned, it means nothing now that we are in this bubble in Orlando. It means nothing. So, for instance, you start looking at matchups. If the Jazz were to climb to 3, they would get either Denver, Houston, or Oklahoma City, maybe Dallas, an outside chance of it being the Mavericks. I don't think it gets to that point. And so, really, you're just shuffling who you play between those 3 or 4 teams. That's what this bubble has created in the Western Conference. It seriously diminishes the importance of a 2 or a 3 seed. 2-3 is widely important under regular circumstances because you have home court over a team that's pretty similar to you. 2 and 3 matchups are pretty similar. That doesn't matter anymore. You're playing in the same arena. So now you're just looking at matchups. You want Houston in the first round. I'm a firm believer of that. I think that's a matchup that the Jazz, I think their size, and I think the way the Jazz play defense, I think they could wear down Houston. I don't believe the Rockets are sustainable over the course of a 7-game set due to the lack of size that they have. Also, with the usage rate of Mike D'Antoni's offense with James Harden, I think Utah gives Houston massive fits if it comes to that point. Yeah, the Rockets have won 3 straight. Don't care. I'm looking over the course of a 7-game set. So the importance of tonight's game. If the Jazz find a way to top the Lakers, they have a chance to move into that 3 seed. But then again, it's going to be a combination of Denver, Houston, Utah, Oklahoma City, 3 through 6. I believe it's those 4 squads. But can you find some sort of consistency on the offensive end of the floor? I like Jordan Clarkson, been a big fan of Jordan Clarkson since he came out of Mizzou. Loved what he did with the Lakers his first couple of seasons in the league. I may not have won a championship in Cleveland, but he was an offensive boost to LeBron and the Cavaliers when he was dealt from LA to Cleveland. And then as far as the Jazz are concerned, this guy has been your best weapon offensively, especially coming off of the bench. I mean, he was terrific in the game against the Pelicans. Struggled a little bit in this game against the Thunder. Everybody did. I mean, the Jazz just shot 8 of 31 from beyond the arc in this game. 34 of 87 from the field. And really, if you just look across the board since the league has restarted, defense has been ahead of offense, but this was a problem for the Jazz before the season came to a stop. Let's see what they can do tonight against the Laker team. Again, I think it's a terrible matchup for the Jazz. If they can get a win, this would be huge, I think, for this team moving forward. Only 6 seeding games left before we dive into the postseason. Jazz-Lakers coming up tonight, 7 o'clock tip-off, 6:50. We'll get you out to live coverage with David Locke and Ron Boone. We're going to break for just a moment. We'll come back. We'll end with some Major League Baseball talk right here on Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM KOAL.
Well, back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. Let's talk Major League Baseball. There was the conversation that was brought up on Friday that just maybe the season would be put on hold or canceled completely today due to another COVID outbreak, this time built around the St. Louis Cardinals. That's not the case. We have baseball going on. Should have a game going on right now with the Indians and the Reds. However, that game has been postponed due to weather. I'll bring in Travis Anderson. Travis, Commissioner Rob Manfred has made it pretty abundantly clear they will continue to play baseball.
Yeah, and Rob Manfred's got to be better as well. If he's going to put this, you know, he kind of threw the players all under the bus with his comments Friday, but he's got to be better too. Everybody's got to be better if we want baseball and if this thing's going to work.
How does Rob Manfred have to be better? Like, I'm as hard as anyone on Manfred. In fact, I've been almost unfair to Rob Manfred.
I think you've been on point with Manfred. I think he's done some questionable things, and I think the criticism that's came his way is, you know, deserved.
Okay, so based on everything that we know right now with COVID, what can Manfred do better? Because when I look at it, Rob Manfred is not the one that told the Miami Marlins to go on out to a club. He's not the one that told the St. Louis Cardinals to go ahead and go hang out at a casino. That's not Rob Manfred. So players have to be held accountable. And Derek Jeter himself said there was a false sense of security around his team that led to this COVID outbreak. So to me, I look at this situation and I say it's 100% on the players. 100% on the players. For everything that Manfred did that drove me absolutely nuts during the offseason, the idea of playing in a bubble in Arizona was the most realistic chance to prevent something like this from happening. Players didn't want it. So what can Manfred do to help the situation?
I think we got to be harder on these players that are going out and breaking the rules that are set in place. You know, the Marlins and the Cardinals, they both got laxed in what they did, and now they've caused so much, you know, scheduling problems with games being canceled. He's got to punish those players somehow, some way, I think. And if, you know, he comes down hard on them, then other players around the league are going to look at it and say, well, we better follow protocol or that's going to happen to us.
Well, I would hope that players around the league are looking and saying,
I don't think
this is pretty real.
Yeah, I mean, you had Cardinal players going to the casino. Obviously, they were not taking the protocol serious.
Yeah, and look, the rules are in place. The rules are in place. But to me, this is no different than breaking the law, right? You're breaking the law within your organization at the moment. There are rules and regulations that we live by. I mean, it's against the law for me to go out in the parking lot right now and steal your car. I can't do that. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to do it and that I'm not, you know, nobody else has control over me. And that's why it's a lack of self-awareness on behalf of these players. And this is how close we are to getting the season canceled. Now we have three teams. We have the Cardinals. We have the Phillies. We have the Marlins. And the Phillies, it really wasn't their fault.
No, the Phillies get a play tonight, right? They're back tonight. So the Cardinals, we know the four-game set with Detroit this week has been canceled. They're still stuck in Milwaukee. Hopefully they get that series with the Cubs this weekend, but the Marlins, what, they get to start again this week too as well?
Wednesday? That's the idea.
But they're going to have to make up these games. So St. Louis is out seven games now. They're going to have to make up seven. Miami's got to make up, what, seven as well. So you just put everything into a crunch.
I'm still of the mindset that you need a bubble. And again, to me, I can't blame Manfred for this. I really can't.
And the bubbles worked. Look at the NBA and the NHL.
Yeah, the bubbles worked.
And the soccer.
The bubbles worked. I mean, anyone that was questioning the bubble, I'm not a doctor. And so I'm in no position to say, well, you're absolutely wrong, but it just made logical sense to me that the bubble would actually work. And we are seeing it work in the NBA. We're seeing it work in the NHL. We're seeing it work in the WNBA as well. So these are three sports that we have going on right now that have worked within a bubble. But really, I mean, players have got to be held accountable for what they're doing. Isn't it ironic that Joe Kelly throws a pitch that is perceived intentional, at Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman, and he is suspended eight games. Meanwhile, stupidity and a lack of awareness and blatantly breaking league protocol for the Marlins and Cardinals has resulted in zero suspensions. Does anyone else see a problem with this but me?
That's a huge problem. Joe Kelly didn't deserve what he got, and these Marlins players and Cardinals players have had no punishment, which isn't right.
Yeah, I honestly feel as if you break the rules, if you break the rules and you go out to the club, you go out to the casino, you do something that you know you're not supposed to be doing,
then obviously you don't care about baseball.
I think you should have to forfeit. I think the team should have to forfeit the game. I don't think we should have to make these games up.
No, I think the Cardinals should have to forfeit every game that they've missed.
I feel the same way about the Marlins.
And the Marlins as well, because now you're going to let them play doubleheaders and make these games up after they broke the rules, intentionally broke them? No, forfeit.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. Out of time of this edition of the show. Again, do not forget, coming up tonight, we have the Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Lakers. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call for that one. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. As always, I got to thank Phil Still for taking up the time. I look forward to talking to Phil every single year. He never disappoints. He knows his college football. Get on out and pick up your Phil Still College Football Preview magazine. Out of time. We'll do it again tomorrow. Be safe. We're out.